to really understand American health policy, you've got to understand the Afghanistan history, not just now, but it goes back to Alexander the Great, who messed around there and probably got kicked out, and then the Russians, and then we are there. And you always think you've got these insurgents pushed into the mountain and they're gone, and come spring they come back, new ammunition, specialty drugs, or facilities charges, or beyond. You know, there's always some new gimmick they figure out. And so that is one thing that came to mind. One would hope David Cutler is right, and Stu, when he said maybe this time is different, and maybe things have changed. But we really don't know, because there is a strong resemblance between health policy and Jen Aniston's love life. The curves are very similar, as you saw. The other thing, you can understand Obamacare much better if you understand Afghanistan. There was a situation map presented to General McChrystal when he went there. Our son was actually in his place. And this was presented to the general, and he said, once we understand this map, we won the war. Now, what people don't realize, the Obamacare was actually manufactured in Massachusetts. Didn't David Blumenthal and Stu Altman and David Cutler have their hands in this? And I know Stuart hates simple proposals. Remember the one I once proposed? You said it's too simple, and it was simply not discussed. It was too simple. So what Stuart saw this and said, why don't we just write that on top and give it to Liz Fowler and say, can you legislate this? And she said, I've done worse, Frank Dodds, we just passed it. And this is Obamacare now, and that is, it helps me now here, the insertions, that's Chip Khan's troops. Because he's going to come back with some gimmick to figure out something to torment the fair side. Well, my own thought on this is more to Gene Stewart's presentation. I think what he said was probably right. I think as long as there's rampant price discrimination, I think it'll be very difficult to control prices. I mean, Stewart believes in the cost shift. I wish I could, but Mark Pauly will be angry at me, so I don't. But this price discrimination makes it extremely difficult to ever really control what goes on, because there's always the safety valve of hitting somebody. So I support an all-payer system. I thought at some point, Stuart, you did too. And either on a regional basis, as Maryland does it, with some adjustment for type of hospital, or you could, if you believe in markets, say everyone must use DRGs for everybody, all patients, and the hospitals compete with a conversion factor, one number everyone can see, it's on the web, and so on. Then you have price competition. Now that requires, however, that government pays costs. You cannot have it that Medicaid, for example, pays much, much less and hopes for the cost shift. This wouldn't really work. So that's one thing. The alternative, and that was a paper in Health Affairs, but I mentioned Stu and others, Paul Ginsberg, and I think Joe even sort of at one point said that might be the only way we can do this. The alternative is what I told you last year. We could have a three-tier system, public hospitals, public clinics for publicly insured Americans, especially the poor. Medicare would essentially become a poverty program. And that allows politicians to ration without ever having to admit it to God. Now, whether you fool God this way, I don't know. But it could be done. Now, when I listened to Stuart Butler today, I wasn't quite sure when he talked of global budgeting. Did he mean only this piece of it, or did he mean the whole thing? Because that's a world of difference. Because if you meant only this piece of it, then this is where we're going. Then we would have reference pricing for the middle class, for the employment-based insurance, where the CEOs, et cetera, go to Cedars-Sinai, and the janitors would go to the cheap hospitals, and you pay the whole difference between what the cheapest hospital charges and what everyone else charges. That's what we use that for drugs. You could use it for everything, and then, of course, boutique medicine for the people who can afford that. And I showed this to my students, and I said, maybe this is what you guys are going to do. I don't know. You're going to run the country, not me. And maybe this is what you're going to do. But when I listened to Stu, I don't know if I interpreted him correctly, but very often I get from John Goodman and others, ultimately that's what they're dreaming of. I don't know what Stu had meant, and I honestly don't, he's not here to tell us, but that is how I interpret that. I don't think he meant to capitate Aetna, to globally budget Aetna. Joe, what did you think? You were, no, you may not have been.
This Stu said that Stu was right. I mean, you were right about that.
Let all the people who want that to stand up and tell us what they think.
Okay, anyway, so, you know, that may be the alternative.
About the 8%?
Okay.
Yeah, Joe, come on.
I don't know what he said.
Well,
but.
Well, so he was referring to a sort of budgeting project that a bunch of us were involved in, and what he meant was the government subsidy to put a cap on it, but government subsidy.
Yeah, but ultimately
I think our group felt that the distribution should definitely favor the poor, not people like you.
Yeah. What do you mean? I'm a poor academic. Anyhow, but we here actually to celebrate somebody quite different. It was wonderful. And he's so well known to us that I literally don't know what I'm going to say. His bio is in the book, etc. But I Googled, and I actually did find the bio that's a little different. It says, he was born some time ago. Then he went to kindergarten, and he grew up to be a real man. So with that, David.
So I've been coming to this conference since the beginning, and the reason I've tried to come as often as I can is Stuart, 20 years ago, said to me, we're having this conference in Princeton. If you go and you keep coming, you'll be a better person, and the healthcare system will be fixed. Now, I owe you all an apology. That was the prescription. I was a non-adherent patient. I didn't get to all the conferences. But there's no question that I have enjoyed them enormously and learned an enormous amount from them. I'm going to talk today, or this evening, about cost of care, confronting the cost of care. I want to first add some new data to the discussion that we had this morning about rates of increase in cost of care. And that is, if you go on the New England Journal website as of 5 this evening, you will see that Victor Fuchs has weighed in on this topic. And he's in the Joe Andos column. He said it basically looks back to 1950, looks at rates of increase in GDP and national health expenditures, and sees they track very closely. Of course, that's the rearview mirror. But then he also does something very interesting. He looks at the correlation between rates of increase in any 2 years and the subsequent 20 years, and there's no correlation. So enough to give us further pause about making predictions based on incomplete data. What I wanted to say basically is to start by saying that even if the optimists are right, and I think this was implicit in much of the conversation today, even if the optimists are right, confronting the cost of healthcare remains just as pressing a problem, or certainly a very pressing problem. And I have a couple of points to illustrate that with. The first of this is this. If we were to, some of you may have heard me say this, if we were to put the United States healthcare system on an island and float it out into the North Atlantic, it would rank fifth in GDP among the world's countries. So larger, almost as large as Germany, it's just $500 billion short, larger than France, UK, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. Of course, New Zealand is small. If you look at any other sector of our economy, it doesn't register. So it's not just that we're big and therefore have to spend a lot. This is clearly places us, in terms of cross-national comparisons, in a very special place. Now, when I took economics, introductory economics, as an undergraduate, Joe Newhouse was my tutor. Joe doesn't particularly like to remember that or recognize it, but that was true. And he taught me the importance of opportunity costs. So this is a way of illustrating the opportunity costs associated with what we spend on healthcare compared to what the Swiss have spent on healthcare over the last 30 or plus years. So what could the $15.5 trillion more that we spend as a result of the rates of increase that we've enjoyed have bought us in lieu of healthcare? It could have, first of all, completely retired our current federal debt and left us with a $3.9 trillion surplus. It could have sent 175 million students completely free to a four-year college. It could have covered an area the size of the state of South Carolina with solar panels, which my colleague Christoph tells me would be enough to take care of the energy needs of the entire United States.
It would also be an improvement for South Carolina.
please control yourselves. And it could have bought everyone in the world 4 iPads. The problem with that, of course, is that the iPad only became available around here, so, you know. But there's a lot you could do with the difference between what we spend on healthcare and what the nearest competitor, in terms of rates of increase in healthcare, would spend. Not only that, but the waste issue remains an issue. This is, of course, Don Berwick and Glenn Hackbarth's JAMA article assuming an increase in healthcare costs, but postulating what some of the contributors to those increases might be that are not valuable. And they include things like failures of care coordination, over-treatment, administrative complexity, the pricing failures that Uwe tells us about, and so on. And even if we had these rates of growth in Medicare expenditures, 2% per capita per year, which is below projected GDP rates of growth, we would still be spending nearly $1 trillion on Medicare in 2023, which would be a higher proportion of the federal budget than we currently spend. And if you go out to 3%, it's 18.4. Now we're spending, the rates of increase are less than that right now, but we've been talking in general about constraining growth below historic levels. Those historic levels are not enough to solve our cost problem. A little bit of reflection on a very, very simple model, but one that is a loose adaptation of very much more complicated model. It didn't look quite